So, I'm just gonna put it right here. Why did you decide to be an early childhood teacher?
Well, of course, because I like kids, and it's funny because people say, like, what other things did you want to do when you were growing up? And like, seriously, like from the womb, I think I wanted to be a teacher. I used to play like school with my neighborhood kids, and like, it's like I always had to be the teacher, and I just like the, I don't think I have the personality to be for the older kids. I just like the small ones, and
Small ones.
and I love the child development. I love learning about it and how they develop, and I actually think more teachers should major in child development than other things. So, yeah, I've always wanted to be a teacher and for the little ones.
So can you give me an example of a typical day for you as a teacher?
Exhausting, no. So I come in and you just have to be ready to go from the moment that you walk in that door. Put everything to the side if you have personal issues or you're tired or whatever it is. Because for some of these kids, they really come in and this is the safest place they have. So you really just have to put everything to the side and just put that smile and just go through the day and things that come up. Just take it with a grain of salt and just say, okay. And then sometimes you have to adjust your lessons. You'll be in a lesson and you're like, okay, well, that didn't go well. That's horrible. Or you learn as you go along. Even though I've been teaching for so long, there's still things that I'll do. And I'll be like, okay, well, that didn't work out. So, what do I have to do different? So I would just say being very flexible throughout your day and just go with the flow, especially with the little ones. Because you have a lesson plan book, but it doesn't, I would say 50% of the time at least, it's not really what you have planned for that day because you're working with little humans.
So tell me what you take into consideration when you're developing your curriculum.
The kids that I have in my classroom, of course, the ELL learners, their maturity level, and also which kids will work best in groupings, because a lot of the stuff now is cooperative groups and who can work together and their personalities. So that's one of the things that I look at. They're, more of a nurturing way, because for me, the environment that you build is really how they're going to learn. That some people will say, well, the academics comes first, but I'm just almost the exact opposite. If they feel comfortable in the environment that they're in, I think they'll learn a lot better.
Tell me about the places you have worked in the past and where you are currently working.
As far as education, I've only worked in Baldwin Park. So I'm a product of Baldwin Park. I went to Baldwin Park High School, graduated from there. And straight, I graduated in June and I got hired in actually that September as an instructional aide. So I've been, and I was just working as a bilingual aide for like, I think 4 years, and I got hired on an emergency credential. So it was kind of neat, but hard at the same time because I was working full time and teaching at the same time. So, like, you have to do interviews and stuff. I was actually already there, so I was doing both at the same time. But I've worked in Baldwin Park my whole life. Yeah, and always had English language learners in my class too. And then I did dual language for about, Foreign Language Academy was the first position that I got as a teacher, which is where I taught instruction of reading and writing in Spanish to kids, but it wasn't dual language. I did that for like 3 years, and then I did dual language, I want to say about 7, 8 years, and then now I'm SEI, which is structured English language.
And then tell me about your past education.
Okay, I started off at Mount SAC. I actually started off at Mount SAC because my mom was a single parent, and I had the grades, but I didn't do scholarships or anything, so I started at Mount SAC. I got my AA there, and then I went transferred to Cal State Fullerton. And then from Fullerton, I got my teaching credential. And then from there is when I got my emergency credential. So it was too far for me to commute from work to Cal State Fullerton. So I went to Cal Poly and I got my credential there and I got my BCLAT there to teach bilingual kids. Oh, and then I got my master's. I forgot about that.
And Cal Poly as well.
No, I actually did my master's through Walden University online, but in a cohort. There was like seven teachers here at the school that we had to meet like every week, and everything was online. But it was nice because it was that support with seven teachers. that did it. So we got our master's, and I got my master's in reading and literacy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your educational experiences, so that would tie into how you're talking about the dual language, the foreign mm-hmm. academy, right?
Yes.
So now I'm going to ask you questions that are specifically just working with like dual language
okay.
children.
Okay.
So what are your beliefs on multilingualism?
Multilingualism. Mm-hmm. First of all, in the world that we live in, I think it's crucial. I think we're one of the only countries that doesn't actually require mm-hmm. Kids to learn a second language. I know in other countries, they must learn English, you know, versus their own language. And I think it's competitive out there. And a lot of job applications now, from what I hear from people, the one of the second questions will be, you know, are you bilingual?
Yeah.
So I think it's very important. I think people that think that, you know, and it doesn't have to be Spanish and English. It could be anything, Mandarin and English or whatever it is. But I think they're very narrow-minded to not think that we have to learn another language. I mean, I'm bilingual. I wish I was trilingual. I just got a kid the other day, but he was placed wrong straight from Vietnam. It's like, oh, I wish I knew could, you know, speak a little bit. But not only just the language, but I think just to respect other people's cultures. And the kids really love it. They like to learn about, you know, other people's cultures, and it's important too to value. Even though I'm not specifically in a dual language right now, when I get kids that speak Spanish, I always, because the parents will tell me they're losing the Spanish, you know, because we're not speaking to them in Spanish. I said, please don't lose that, mm-hmm. because it's part of really their culture. You know, if they grow up and they can't speak to their grandparents or they can't speak, it's really sad. So I think it's important in the world that we live in now that you know another language, mm-hmm. definitely. Just in your job and just the way we're developing as a world, really.
Yeah,
it's important.
So how has your previous education and work history impacted the way you interact with multilingual children, and what type of tools do you use to gain information on a child's language background?
What we use for a kid's language background is when the kids enroll in school, the parents have to fill out certain questions about like the language they speak at home. What does the kid usually use at home, English or Spanish or another language? And if anywhere on that form is there's like 5 or 6 questions, and if any of those lines says anything else besides English, they're automatically put in, or I don't want to say tagged, but like as an ELL learner. So they're already going to be given this, I think it's called the ELPA now, all these acronyms, but they're given an English test to see where their English is at automatically if the parent puts that on there. And when I was studying to get my BCLAD, it was just very interesting to learn how the brain works on learning another language. And that was really interesting. That like studies show that people that, you know, or kids that are learning a second language, like at the beginning, it's the parents start to panic like in dual language, because they'll be like in second grade and they don't know how to read in English yet. Even like when I had them and their first language was English, and they couldn't read yet. They were reading maybe in Spanish already, but they weren't reading in English. So the parents would really worry. And it's like, don't worry, study show. We had to show a lot of research that, you know, once they go to like 5th, 6th grade, it really just the brain research, the way it shows, it builds like those dendrites in the brain where they can, you know, work in two languages. So it was really interesting learning about how the brain really works when you're learning another language.
That's interesting. Okay, so these are going to be based on how do you help young children who do not speak English feel comfortable in class. Okay. So what specific strategies do you use?
Okay. First of all, a lot of gestures you see even in your face. Are you smiling? Mm-hmm. And of course, if I can speak the language, some teachers are like, no, you know, don't speak Spanish to them, or, you know, don't do that because then they're never going to speak English to you. And I still do. If the kids are struggling, also tell them in Spanish. Pairing them up also with another student, trying to, just like when I got that little boy from Vietnam, I went home that day and I'm like, okay, looking up, you know, through Google Translate, how do I say good morning? Just really valuing their language, because some of these kids too, sometimes it's a culture shock for them coming from another country. I think it's just the environment that you, a very welcoming environment, a lot of hand motions, a lot of pictures, visuals, really putting pictures to everything and hand motions. I wish I knew sign language, but I don't. But yeah, just a lot of pictures and making them feel welcome, and like I said, pairing them up and showing them, like if you say, you know, bathroom, having them go with a kid to use the bathroom, or if you say sit down, you know, make hand motions, you know, what does it mean to sit down if it's that, you know, that they don't know any English at all. So yeah.
And then what information do you find important to know when you're getting to know that student?
How long they've been in the country, like if, you know, if they've been in the, if they're just coming to our country, or they've been here and they just at home, they speak another language. Do they have any siblings at the school? That's kind of good to know. And also getting to know, actually, if it's not Spanish, what other language do they speak? Because like I'm referencing again this little boy that just got from Vietnam. There's another little girl that's like in fourth grade that came, same thing, same type of an experience when she was in kinder. So speaking to other teachers too, like, do you have a kid, or knowing the other kids in the school that might speak that language so that they can help you out.
Oh, that's a good idea. Does culture influence the way you approach a dual language student?
Yes, I think it does, because you have to value their culture. I think the language, I think language and culture is intertwined. I don't think it can be separated. So just the simple thing, like, you know, if you lose your language, your native language, how are you going to speak to your grandparents, or, you know, your older people in your family? So I think it does have a lot to do. I think those two cannot be separated.
Yeah. How do you promote their native oral language?
Like I said, even through Google Translate, or finding, you know, having, making them feel important by saying, hey, you know, I want to learn your language. What, you know, how do you say, you know, good morning in English, or how do you say hello or goodbye or yes or no? So making them feel that they're also bringing something to the table, that they're not the only ones that are learning something.
Next one is, how does your classroom environment engage dual language learners?
When I had dual language, the ideal is, of course, of having like 10 of the kids, their first language would be English. Mm-hmm. And then the other half, the other 10, because it would be 20, mm-hmm. is they speak another language. So I think really, and when you do dual language, so you have to keep them separate. Mm-hmm. Like for example, I did all the Spanish, and then for English time, they would go to an English teacher, especially when they're little. Mm-hmm. Because that way, when the kids that are learning Spanish or that other language, they will never want to use it with me, because they'll feel more comfortable if they, oh, she speaks Spanish, so I'm going to just speak Spanish mm-hmm. to her. So we always kept it separate. And I don't think I'm answering the question. How does your classroom environment engage dual language learners? Oh, okay. Sorry, I went off on a tangent. And engaging them is very important too with the pictures, like mm-hmm. letting them draw out stuff. So a lot of oral expression, not really per se, okay, you have to write a good complete sentence, or you have to learn to read today, but having a lot of pictures of mm-hmm. things, and then having them express themselves. Okay. So yeah.
How do you welcome families, especially those who do not speak the same language as you?
I'm trying to think of, like, because Spanish, I speak Spanish, so that would be really easy. Mm-hmm. But again, if, like, let's say kids from another country, like Vietnam or wherever, again, I would reach out to the office and the home liaison that's there that works with families, and mm-hmm. is there another family that, you know, maybe speaks that language, or somebody from the district, and see if they can support me in that way, like if I had back to school night or whatever, where they can come in and mm-hmm. have a translator for them and help them out, just to make them feel welcome, and just not like, okay, well, what is she saying? I have to go figure it all out. So just trying to reach out to the other support. Okay. Yeah.
And then what types of assessments do you find best show a dual language learner student's progress?
Well, for the little ones, like for, of course, sounds, mm-hmm. their beginning sounds of letters and the name of the letters. In Spanish, I guess if it was syllables, basic high frequency words, counting, you know, from if it's, I mean, the primary. So see if they can count the numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it. Yeah.
When it comes to identifying young multilingual children who have a disability, what are some of the obstacles?
If they already have a disability, sometimes it could be done, but it's hard. You have to find ways in whatever their disability is, and just like you would for even if they weren't learning a second language. But if they have a disability and they're learning a second language, you really have to tap into what works for that specific child. You know, and if they were in some, because I know it's a choice to be in dual language sometimes. There were cases where it might not be the best choice for that student, so we've had to talk to parents in that way. But for some kids, it does work. And then especially because sometimes if they have a disability, like whatever it is, autism, sometimes they're really bright, so they really pick up, they need to be challenged. So having that other language sometimes, it was actually a good thing. So I guess it's just each individual kid is different. It's just whatever strategies would work even for a kid with not dis with no disabilities, you really have to tap into what works for that kid.
What type of professional training have you had regarding teaching dual language learners?
Well, GLAAD training, which is guided language acquisition design, which is a lot of charts, a lot of pictures, you know, telling stories while you're drawing. And then just all my classes that I had to take for my BCLAD, that's the only thing I can think of, which was a lot of like biliteracy, bicultural classes. But that's all I can think of, yeah.
Does the district offer any?
They used to have like specific like little trainings for the dual language teachers, like I said, guided language acquisition, just having us read different articles on research and what works and what doesn't. Yeah, but not any, well, maybe it's because that the school is not dual language anymore, but I don't know if they do anymore, because a lot of the stuff now that has changed so much, a lot of the curriculum, we make sure in Baldwin Park that it does come in Spanish as well. So like the program that we use, there's also the, you know, we use Wonder, so they have Maravillas for the dual kids. Yeah.
And last one, what type of preparation do you believe will further support your understanding of multilingual children and their families?
Just continuing what the research shows, I think. You know, studying, I think a group of kids that, you know, were consistent with it and stayed with the program, because that's why one of the reasons that it's not here anymore is because a lot of the parents really didn't understand and they would pull out the kids, and it's real important to keep it, like, I don't want to say sacred, but keep to how the program's supposed to be in dual language, where it's, you know, half the kids are speak, you know, English as their first language and the other half don't, because it really helps, they help each other as well. But just keeping updated with the research, I think, and then really educating parents on what it's about and showing them, you know, that the job market's out there. You really need to have a second language now. It's very competitive.
All
Yeah.
right, thank you
You're
so much.
welcome.
Two car owl, the other car owl crashed it, and then the car stopped, and then there people was walking, and the villa was here, and then the car was stopped, and then all the high school came all walking, and then it turned green light. All of them went to the sidewalk, and the other high school crew was waiting for the car to stop. And then the other high school just got on the
Where?
other way walking. They went to Chuck E. Cheese.
The high school kids?
Yeah. That's and then.
All done. I like your story. So, why did you decide to be an early childhood teacher?
Well, my from the beginning, when I first started, when I had my own children, that's when I realized how interesting it was the way they learn and the way they develop. I became interested in, you know, not only my own but in other children. So I started seeking not only more information and to educate myself to raise my own children, but to also be able to help other children.
Can you give me an example of a typical day for you as a teacher?
Typical day, well, the first thing is planning. What are we going to do? And usually what I plan is according to the children's interests. But at the same time, we have to follow a curriculum. Mm-hmm. So we try to fit in the interest in the curriculum to come up with a plan on how are we gonna present this to the children. And then we'll see if it, according to their response, if it worked or didn't work.
And then tell me, what do you take into consideration when you develop your curriculum? So I know you said the interests, right?
Yes, that's what we take into consideration, you know, according to the interest, mm-hmm. according to the same, you know, we looked into their backgrounds, what is it that they bring from home. Sometimes they come home talking about certain things, mm-hmm. so then we try to bring that into the classroom too.
Second question, tell me about the places you have worked in the past and where you are currently working.
So I've been teaching for, oh my God, for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. I started with the LA Unified. Mm-hmm. Then I went to a nonprofit for like 14 years. And then I came here to Baldwin Park. Okay. So so it's been maybe 20 plus years that I've been working with children.
Tell me about your past education.
So I went to East LA College. I got my AA there. Then I got my bachelor's from the University of Laverne. And we never finish learning. It's never done. It's a ongoing process. There's always something new, some new ideas, new ways. So I'm still continuing.
Number four, what are your educational experiences?
As far
as like throughout you, how have you been like working with the children? What has like kind of helped you like develop? Like what has helped you, you know, like become like a better teacher?
What's really mm-hmm. helped me is apparently all those child development classes that we take, it really helped me, I guess, get a better view too of how the children function, how they think, all the milestones that they go through, how can we help them reach those milestones, so what to look for. So my education has really played a big key on the way the classroom is run. You know, it's taught me a lot on the full development of the child. So therefore, you know, it helps me to better understand. And also the fact that every child is different. You can just, they're not all clear cut the same. They're all different. And we have to take all that into consideration.
So these following questions are going to be about working with dual language learners. What are your beliefs on multilingualism?
Well, my belief is that every child's capable of learning more than one, two, and three languages. You know, as long as they're exposed at an early age, then they're able to pick it up. Because like they say, children are like sponges, they absorb everything. They are able to pick up the language, the different tones, the different languages.
Mm-hmm. How has your previous education and work history impacted the way you interact with multilingual children? And what types of tools do you use to gain information on a child's language background?
Well, again, as far as tools, we try we go to home visits, so we try to see what, you know, what are their beliefs, what is their culture, what do they celebrate? And also we realize that most of the children, their families are very important. So we look for answers in the families themselves and to help us, you know, to be able to, pretty much introduce, you know, like new ideas and to the children.
So the next ones are going to be around the questions of, like, how do you help young children who do not speak English feel comfortable in class? So what specific strategies do you use to make a child who doesn't speak English more comfortable?
I'll give you a good example. We have a little girl. She's not here today. She is Chinese. So in the beginning, her Spanish, of course, no Spanish, and English, not too much. But again, you know, learn a few words and, you know, bring in their music from where they're from and just make them feel comfortable as possible with, you know, things from home. And eventually, you know, they start picking up all the, like, what is it? They pick up phrases and words, and then, you know, little by little, they start, you know, speaking the language or speaking. This little girl speaks Spanish, and this is her third language, English, what is it, Mandarin, and Spanish now.
So next one, what information do you find important to know when you're getting to know your dual language learner?
Well, just that, I think, again, I mean, I can't stress enough the fact that family is very important, the family. And that's how, you know, we get most of our info, you know, where they're from, where, again, traditions and, you know, how can they, you know, bring in from their culture. Because, again, although we all speak Spanish, we all use different words.
Yeah.
You know, so then we have to also take in consideration the words they use, you know, and, you know, apply that too into our classroom.
And does culture influence the way you approach a dual language student?
Yes, I want to say yes, because I know there's some things that maybe in other cultures might be, you know, kind of tell you, it might not be maybe okay in other cultures when maybe an art is or other children's cultures, like especially there's some words, like I said again, there's words that I know in my culture they're fine, but another culture is not an acceptable word. So then we have to take all that in consideration too.
How do you promote their native oral language?
Well, basically by trying to have it in the classroom too. What I've done, I've had the parents in their language, like write like the simple words, like hello, goodbye, how are you? Also, again, we try to learn those basic words so that they're not only feel comfortable, but they know that we're trying ourselves to speak their language.
How does your classroom environment engage dual language learners?
Well, our dual language basically too is Spanish, so we do try to enrich the classroom with the language, with the Spanish words, with the everything is labeled in more than one language. And again, you know, we try to bring in most of the family into our and have them to.
How do you welcome families, especially those who do not speak the same language as you?
Okay, so the same thing as for families. I know sometimes, yeah, the language is a barrier. So when we don't, like, for example, if I were to have, like, a family that, like, that don't speak my, if I can't get across to them because I don't speak their language, we do try to get someone to come in and help us with the interpretation, help them feel more comfortable and able to translate whatever it is that, because I know there's other languages, although I speak Spanish, but there's more languages that we have in our program. And if we can't speak the language, then we will find someone to speak the language and come in and translate so that the parent feels comfortable.
What types of assessments do you find best show a dual language learner student's progress?
I think we work with the DRDP, what's called DRDP, and that's an assessment too. And there is a section in the DRDP where it asks, you know, there's an English portion there. So it does ask for all the Spanish-speaking children, you know, it asks, is he the receptive? Is he able to understand it? Is he able to speak it? Is he able to understand, like, for example, books being read? So there's an area in the DRGP that does hit the English speaking. However, we also reverse it, and we do it where to the Spanish, to the English speaking children, are they able to understand in Spanish? Are they able to speak the Spanish? So we also reverse the what it's a ELD, it's called, yeah. English learning.
Yeah.
So yeah, we also reverse it.
Okay. When it comes to identifying young Muay Thai children who have a disability, what are some of the obstacles?
I'm sorry, could you read that again?
When it comes to identifying young multilingual children who have a disability, what are some of the obstacles?
Well, the obstacles, again, will be the communication with the families. Mm-hmm. Again, we would, you know, maybe constantly have to get maybe an interpreter to go back and forth with the families. With the children, we accept children with disabilities in our program. And the classroom pretty much is prepared to welcome these children. You know, as you can see, we try to have open spaces if there's a wheelchair or any kind of aids. So open spaces that they, you know, get around. Depending on the disability, if it's language, which is like the speech, we have on site our own disability, so they just walk out the door to the speech. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're well equipped to, you know, be able to work with children with disabilities.
Attention,
and also
teachers,
with their parents.
Ms. Dallas, yeah.
Like, do you feel
Ms.
like
Dallas,
some get like either over-diagnosed because of the second language?
You know what? There's been, I think, instances, yeah, where maybe I feel that because of a second language, or because they don't understand you, that you see them like, okay, maybe something else is going on. Mm-hmm. But then once you start assessing the children, and then you start with time too, you start saying, oh, okay, it was just a language barrier. Okay, I see. Mm-hmm. It's not that he didn't do it because he didn't want to. He didn't know what we were saying. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes, yes, mm-hmm. I think sometimes the language does mm-hmm. is a barrier. Mm-hmm.
What type of professional training have you had regarding teaching dual language learners?
We are sent to like I was telling, we're sent to workshops. And also, like I said, right now I'm taking a dual language class. It's at the university level, it's a dual language class. And I think that with this dual language, that I think we're going to, you know, we need to continue to have trainings and take courses, because, you know, it's evolving.
Yeah. What type of preparation do you believe will further support your understanding of multilingual children and their families?
Again, I think that if they keep developing these classes for, you know, especially as teachers, you know, I think if anything, it's going to continue to grow the dual language. So if they could continue supplying these classes and, you know, university level, I think that would really help us in be able to continue to better serve their children time after time.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I just see it really quick?
Sure. Okay.
So why did you decide to be an early childhood teacher?
I didn't actually. So for early childhood,
yeah, well, like, since you're like
kinder,
so why did you decide that one would best fit you?
Choosing kinder was actually more just something that happened along the way in teaching. It's the grade I started with. I really didn't see myself starting in kinder, but I did like it. It's very different because you're starting with an absolutely clean state with the kids. So having them, you see the most growth in kinder. So even though I've taught other grades, this is the grades that you really see just so much growth from when the way they start the school year to when they end.
Okay. Can you give an example of a typical day for you as a teacher?
It's pretty chaotic. It's, as you can see, it's very constant. The kids have a lot of they're just very curious, but at the same time, they have a lot of personal needs that we're trying to manage at the same time. So it's balancing the personal needs with the learning expectations and having them learn how to regulate what times are appropriate. So it's, we're constantly moving back and forth because they have to be very active. It's, we work on the carpet a little, then we move to the tables, then we move back, and it's really trying to always just keep them engaged.
So tell me what you take into consideration when developing your curriculum.
Not just the content, how difficult are they mature enough for it? Because there's things that I would not teach at the beginning of the year. They're just not ready for it developmentally. So I look at those things, and also the physical space, what's required. How much do I need?
Tell me about the places you have worked in the past and where you're currently working.
Okay, so I've only worked in one other school district, and that was in San Gabriel. I taught TK. I started the kinder TK program. I did kinder, I did second, third, and a newcomers, first through fifth grade as well.
So tell me about your past education. So like your graduate, like where you graduated from, like your coursework.
Okay, so I did a BA with focusing in liberal studies from Fullerton. I did my BCLAT at Fullerton as well, and then I returned to them for a master's in curriculum and instruction with a focus on ed tech.
And what are your educational experiences? So kind of like when you did your teacher prep.
Okay. With the teacher prep, I did a dual language classroom in lower grades and then a regular just English classroom for a third grade.
So these following questions are working with dual language children. What are your beliefs on multilingualism?
I think it's very powerful. It's very, it's a great asset for these kids and seeing adults and being an adult that's multilingual. It's a very big asset that's really going to help them. So I'm a very big proponent of it.
How has your previous education and work history impacted the way you interact with multilingual children? And what type of tools do you use to get information on their language background?
Okay. Tools, I like to connect with parents a lot. So I always let them know if there's questions or if there's things I need to know, and we have these discussions. I do a questionnaire in the beginning of the school year, asking them to fill out different questions or telling me about their students, things that I wouldn't normally know, things that they really like, things that they don't like, or habits they have, because I really learn a lot about them, and then it helps me support them here in the classroom. Sigue, mija, sigue. Ni modo, mija. Así lo sigues.
How do you help young children who don't speak English feel comfortable in class? So what specific strategies do you use?
Now, is that in the context of a dual language classroom or a regular classroom?
It'll be like in both, whichever one you want to answer.
Okay, because in a regular classroom where the instruction is in English, then I use a lot of visuals, hand gestures, and partners to help them learn English. In a dual classroom, they're actually my models. They're my language models that really help every other student, so it's very diverse.
What information do you find important to know when you're getting to know your dual language student?
How much exposure they have to Spanish, since this is in dual language, since it's a 90-10, the language I'm really focusing on is Spanish, and how many models they have, how many interactions or opportunities do they have to listen and practice. Así lo vas a usar. Así lo vas a usar. Maxine, un momento. Un momento, por favor. También.
Does culture influence the way you approach a dual language learner?
No. Not to the point where... It doesn't. It does in the sense that I always try to include the different cultures. So even though I have Spanish speakers, they can come from different regions. And so we'll have different terms, and we'll always talk about how there's different terms for the same thing and how we value all of those different terms.
How do you promote their native oral language? I know you said earlier that they don't have a specific like everyone comes in different languages? Is that kind of what you were referring
to? No, no. So everyone comes. So what's your question this way?
It's how do you promote their native oral language?
Okay, so with their native oral language, most of them come are English speakers. Is what, so that even though they have some, mijo, rápido, sí. Even though they have exposure, for instance, to Spanish, it's not their true native language. Most, they are really just exposed to hearing it from a relative, but they're not necessarily engaged in it. So they're not true Spanish speakers.
And how does your classroom environment engage dual language learners?
The classroom environment, I try to make it very visual, very colorful, where they can use color to disseminate information. So for instance, like with my maps, one color refers to information we received about one person and another. So I try to break that up. So very visual to help them really fill in the those pieces.
How do you welcome families, especially those who do not speak the same language as you?
So, okay, so if they spoke a different language?
Yeah, like, how would you? Like, if you don't have that right now, like, but how would you?
Okay, well, in the past, I always try, when I've had that experience, I do my best to use visuals with them, or gestures, or having a translator. Mija, estoy hablando. ¿Vas a esperar, por favor, un momento? Maxine? Sí? Gracias. So, or else trying to even use a translating device to do that.
What type of assessments do you find best show a dual language student's progress?
Assessments definitely sounds. For literacy, using we use Estrellita for phonics, and that has really shown how they're really growing in understanding the breakdown from sounds to syllables to words.
And when it comes to identifying young multilingual children who have a disability, what are some of the obstacles? So, like, sometimes they get, like, overdiagnosed.
The obstacles are usually trying to figure out, and being careful, is it a disability or is it just a language delay? So we always take into account language takes 5 to 7 years. So especially when it's the production of language, I don't tend to push. Or one of the things I do look for is, do they make those same mistakes? Or do they have those same errors in their native language?
What types of professional training have you had regarding teaching dual language learners?
I went through a BCLAT credential program.
And last question, what type of preparation do you believe will further support your understanding of multilingual children and their families?
Further training? Definitely with writing. Writing is probably the hardest thing. So training and writing with dual language and being able to transfer language from their native to the target language is really important. That is always the hardest piece for these kids.
Thank you so much. Why did you decide to be an early childhood teacher?
My interest in children and to be part of their development. It just thrills me that I could be, you know, part of them growing up and seeing all their firsts and just helping them or to be the next scholar.
Tell me what you take into consideration. Can you give an example of a typical day for you as a teacher?
Very hectic. There is not a moment of breathing time because your eyes are constantly moving around. Mm-hmm. Since we have infant all the way up to, you know, school age. Mm-hmm. So there's a variety of age groups, and so they're just constantly, you know, one day they're climbing, another day, you know, maybe infants aren't, but before you know it, they're somewhere else and they're on top of a table or they're. So my day is just about that. It's mm-hmm. just going around, making sure that everybody is safe, mm-hmm. and then giving trust to those children who need it. Because mm-hmm. when you get new children, you have to build that trust with them. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the time that I take with them to build relationships, because mm-hmm. it's big. That's my biggest thing, is building relationships and trust with these children. Mm-hmm. Because that's how you get them to do what you want them to do. Because mm-hmm. if you don't have that, then, you know, it doesn't, yeah. you don't connect.
And tell me what you take into consideration when you develop your curriculum.
The individual. the individual child, who, what she or he likes, or where she is in the developmental stage, because we do DRDPs. So I watch to see where they're at and where, what, and that activity is geared towards them to get them to that next level.
Tell me about the places you have worked in the past and where you're currently working.
Well, it's totally out of this this realm. I was in human resource. Mm-hmm. I was a human resource director for 5-6 years. And then, but always had children in my heart. I always knew that I needed to be, I was going to be somebody, something with children, whether it's social worker or something. Mm-hmm. So when I retired, that was my calling. And mm-hmm. it was the best thing I could have ever done. It was the best choice. I should have done this earlier when I was younger. But I didn't.
Tell me about your past education.
I went to the University of Laverne, so I have like 128 units there in human development. Mm-hmm. And then I've taken 24. I took units at the, before I even knew anything, I went to the adult school right here in La Puente Hacienda. Mm-hmm. And they told me that I could take their 24 units there and I would be mm-hmm. able to mm-hmm. apply for the credential for teaching. Well, that didn't work out. So mm-hmm. I had to retake those classes all over again at Rio Hondo.
Oh gosh.
So yeah, so those are some of the units mm-hmm. that I've had, and that's the kind of ones I'm building now.
Mm-hmm. And what are your educational experiences? So like when you did those units, mm-hmm. Like did any of them like help you with like early childhood settings?
Oh, for sure. Oh, for mm-hmm. sure. There's a lot of things that that I didn't know that really was an eye opener to me, and it just helped me be a better teacher to the children with these units, for sure.
So the following are working with dual language learners. What are your beliefs on multilingualism?
Well, I believe, first of all, that there should be either an aide or a teacher with that language. And what you have to do is you don't get rid of their language, obviously, is you keep them, keep that language with the children. At the same time, teach them the new language, the English. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just building again that relationship and knowing that there is other people that speak their language mm-hmm. or that can relate to their culture, because that's really mm-hmm. important.
How has your previous education and work history impacted the way you interact with multilingual children? Like furthermore, like what type of tools do you use to gain that information, like their language background?
It's the trust, the relationship building. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. just like you do with an adult or mm-hmm. an older person, the same thing. You build their trust and you build a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm. So the following are going to be based on how you help young children who don't speak English feel comfortable. What specific strategies do you use?
Is trying to, like again, trying to get somebody mm-hmm. who speaks their language, have their family pictures up, understand, with the parents when you first do your intake, you interview the parents to see what their culture is, how do they live at home, mm-hmm. What sort of things they do there that we might be able to bring on to the classroom setting as well.
Mm-hmm. The next one, what information do you find important to know when you're getting to know your dual language student?
How they live, their family. The family's big because that's really where they mm-hmm. learn a lot of what they do. So understanding the family values and their culture and how they, what you can and can't do, because sometimes what's okay with you, it may not be. So you have to put aside your own culture and understand theirs.
Does culture influence the way you approach a dual language learner
definitely,
student?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because again, that's how they can relate and mm-hmm. you can get them to, to understand them a little better. Mm-hmm. Right.
How do you promote their native oral language?
Well, promoting would be the same way. It would just be understanding that language, understanding mm-hmm. and being able to communicate with them.
How does your classroom environment engage dual language learners?
Well, we try to put up things that are familiar to them. Again, the family board mm-hmm. that shows their family. Maybe items that they may be familiar with in their culture to bring them into the classroom.
How do you welcome the families, especially those who don't speak the same language as you?
I try to approach it in a very, I just kind of get to know them first without, being too stringent on the rule and what needs to be happening. Just kind of getting to know them, just like you do any other person. Getting to know who they are, how they, what they feel about certain things, and What are they looking for in a daycare environment? Mm-hmm. And I know some of the important things, obviously, is safety and trust mm-hmm. and relationships and openness, mm-hmm. you know, making sure you're open with the family. So, you know, just kind of a relaxed environment at first, mm-hmm. you know, an interview when you're just kind of talking to them, getting mm-hmm. to know them.
What types of assessments do you find best show a dual language learner student's progress?
Well, when you say whether it be dual or not, mm-hmm. They all are in ages and stages of their development. So mm-hmm. whether they speak the language or not, we try to help them mm-hmm. get to those levels, whether it be in their, trying to get them in their own language or into the English language, it doesn't matter. They're all needing to do, mm-hmm. you know, get up to a certain level in mm-hmm. ISO.
When it comes to identifying young multilingual children who have a disability, what are some of the obstacles? So like how some of them might get overdiagnosed with speech?
True. Usually mm-hmm. because I deal with agencies, the mm-hmm. agencies will come to me with that, with mm-hmm. already tutors or somebody that's going to help them with the mm-hmm. language. But what I do is try, if it's language that they need help with, I try to really focus on that. So we are reading books, having a lot of conversation, which we do already. Mm-hmm. We talk to the children all day long. We talk adult language. Mm-hmm. We don't baby talk them or anything. But yeah, we just try to enhance them with different materials mm-hmm. To help them through that.
What type of professional training have you had regarding teaching dual language learners?
I haven't had it. It's been in my courses, but I haven't really because mm-hmm. I take a lot of personal growth mm-hmm. Classes as well. They're not units, but they're hours that I do. It's not specific to dual language, but it's always been spoken to in some of the other courses that I've taken.
And finally, what type of preparation do you believe will further support your understanding of multilingual children and their families?
Probably courses, you know, taking specific courses, if there's any that will deal with something like that.
Thank you. I don't know if you wanted to do the survey first or the interview.
You know, I have to leave at 3:30, okay. So probably the...
Why did you decide to be an early childhood teacher?
I had a lot of experience babysitting in high school and prior to high school, and we actually ran a children's center in our high school. So once I started that, I never did anything else.
Can you give an example of a typical day for you as a teacher?
A lot of running around, a lot of up and down. Come in and greet the children and the families, get breakfast ready, answer questions from parents, answer questions from kids, help them transition from their parents. We have breakfast, we play, go outside, come inside. A lot of playing, a lot of playing with a purpose though. Mm-hmm. They learn a lot, I believe, through their play. Typical, eat, play, sleep, eat some more, play some more. And then I should be in the office a bit doing paperwork and stuff.
So tell me what you take into consideration when you develop your curriculum.
Curriculum is based on children's identified needs. We keep anecdotal records of the kids that we put into an assessment. And then as I'm planning things, I think about what their interests are. Mm-hmm. How I want to expand on their interests, and then where their developmentally where their needs are, and hopefully combine the two.
Tell me about the places you have worked in the past and where you are currently working.
Well, I've been here for 30 years, so it's pretty much my my main experience. I did work for 2 years at University of Laverne. Before they had their center at the Fairplex, I worked there. Mm-hmm. I worked very briefly at a chain school, but that wasn't for me.
Tell me about your past education.
I'm a graduate of Mount SAC. Got my AA here, and then I got my bachelor's and my master's at University of Laverne.
And what are your educational experiences? So like the coursework there and your like things that like prepared you to be a teacher?
Just all the, I mean, whatever the required classes, I focused a lot on any infant toddler class I could take because that was my interest rather than preschool. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's harder to find infant toddler, especially when I went to school, but that's what I focused on.
So the following are questions regarding working with dual language children. What are your beliefs on multilingualism?
Either way, it's fine.
I never really articulated it, but that it's important to meet children where they are, no matter what the area is. So if they don't know any English, the majority of our families that don't speak English primarily would be Spanish speaking and Chinese speaking. I do have a lot of Spanish speaking staff, so would have them pair up, and I would still talk to them in English, but help have a Spanish-speaking staff follow up with them, maybe help me with the parents, or if it's the grandparents coming. That's been a typical situation, that maybe the parent understands, but maybe the grandparent doesn't. So have someone who speaks their language help with them so that they do have a clear understanding. Well, I would continue speaking to the child in English so that they hear it and then they pick it up.
How has your previous education and work history impacted the way you interact with multilingual children, and what types of tools do you use to gain more information on their language?
What was the beginning of that question? Previous education? I think a lot more now is focused on, well, now that I'm not taking classes, I think it's focused on probably more multilingual. Is that what you said?
Yes, multilingual.
I don't know. I guess it made me more, it made me aware of it. It made me, maybe before, I think the population is, especially here where we have ESL classes, mm-hmm. a lot of people are coming kind of for that reason. So maybe there are more that don't speak English fluently, or that English is not their primary language. Honestly, I don't remember the classes that I took. It was a while ago that I had my education, but just being open to the fact that is what's happening, mm-hmm. that's, and I need to accommodate it and meet them again where they are, rather than expecting them to be where I am.
Mm-hmm. And how do you help?
What types of tools?
Oh yeah, the tools.
Honestly, the tools are other staff to get information, to talk to the parents and get information. I don't really, it's not like I research it. I can't say that I have a tool that I use.
Mm-hmm. So the next sessions will be about how do you help young children who do not speak English feel comfortable in class? I know you kind of touched on it, mm-hmm. but what specific strategies do you use?
Pairing them up with someone who, if possible, speaks their language. The things that we have in class, like the babies, are all different, you know, well, different colors. It makes it sound like I don't do anything for them, mm-hmm. but I think because I have little ones who don't, a lot of them don't have any language. Mm-hmm. Hearing people speak their language is comforting. It must be comforting, because I know how I feel when I would go somewhere and I don't understand anything, and I'm an adult. Mm-hmm. So if they're already feeling sad because they're not with their family, and then they don't understand anything that's going on, and they don't understand anything that people are saying, it's got to be kind of scary. So that I would have people, I do have staff who speak English and Spanish. I don't have any Chinese-speaking staff at the moment. which is unfortunate, but I asked the parents too, you know, do they hear English at home at all? And most of them do. Either they have older siblings or the parents, but it creates a challenge if they don't haven't heard it before.
What information do you find important to know when you are getting to know your dual language learning student?
Well, that's one of the things, is that do they hear English at home? Who speaks to them in English? Who speaks to them in a different language? What is the language? Do the children have any language? Do they seem to respond better to one language or the other? I guess what the children's past experience with, mm-hmm. with English and with a second language, or actually with the first language, are.
Mm-hmm. Does culture influence the way you approach a dual language learner student?
Well, it does, in the sense that I think everything that we do is cultural in a way, mm-hmm. that things like how close we stand to somebody, how we touch somebody, you know, is physical affection okay? Do you need to be more, formal, clothing things, how they feel about getting dirty, all those things are cultural. Mm-hmm. As a sort of a broad sense of culture, but also as a family culture. So everything that we do has to do with culture, and because I'm in charge of the classroom, mm-hmm. I don't want to impose mine, but I do things in my way of my culture, and so that's why I try to ask parents, what do you do about this? How do you nap? How do you eat? So that I could be at least sensitive and try to accommodate their cultural, not habits, but ways of doing things, to the whatever extent possible.
How do you promote their native oral language?
Always encourage them to speak their language. I think I might be the only one in my class that doesn't speak Spanish fluently. Mm-hmm. The only staff. And I have children who do speak to me in Spanish, and I can speak. I've taken it. I understand and speak at about a 2-year-old level. So I'm right on their level, and so I could, if they tell me, come here, sit down, eat or something, mm-hmm. then I can. But it's not. I'll repeat them and I'll respond to them, but it's important for me not to pretend like I know, like I'm fluent in Spanish, mm-hmm. Because I'm not. But I'm not gonna, correct them, or if they, use English and Spanish in a sentence, I'm not gonna. It's just how it is. Yeah. I'm not gonna, point it out, or. I'm totally went off on a tangent. I forgot what the question was.
How do you promote their native oral
language? To encourage it. It's important to maintain that home language. Mm-hmm. As they get older, even by like 3, 4, they want to speak the language of their peers. So mm-hmm. I always tell parents to keep the home language, both at home and but don't be offended if their children don't speak it. So, mm-hmm. but I do encourage. It's okay.
How does your classroom environment engage dual language learners?
I think the same ways that I've kind of talked about, that the staff speak to them in their language. Is that what you mean by engage, or
yeah, get or their like attention? Kind of set up the environment, like your interest centers, like labeling.
Well, this age can't read, and they, we put pictures with everything, which I think a lot of preschools do. I don't, actually, I was just going through some files while I was waiting, and I found an insect book that I had made, and it had the picture, it had the photo of an insect, and it had the English and Spanish word. I was thinking, so I deleted the file, but I saved that, because that's something, kids are interested in bugs, and that's, even though they can't read, they could at least see the word. And so I think that's something that I'm going to print. The flies were in our face today, so they started talking about bugs. So mm-hmm. that's something that taking their interest and then making it relevant to what they're interested in, and then and I ask staff too, because you know, often I'll look up a word and it's like the formal phrase of it. It's not what a person would actually say in Spanish, and so that's where I use my staff then too, for you know, the correct pronunciation or the correct phrase, rather than the formal.
Yes. How do you welcome families, especially those who do not speak the language as you?
Really the same as any other family. Again, the staff, though, you know, can you go talk to her, because and tell her this? Or sometimes I mean, it's very obvious that I'm having someone translate, because I need to tell them something more involved. And I'll ask this, you know, sometimes they'll say like, oh no, I understand. And I said, okay, but would you prefer? Spanish is the most common. And they seem like relieved because someone it's you're more comfortable speaking your home language. So if it has to be another person helping me translate or another person, usually we want the teachers and the associates only to talk to the parents about some things. You know, again, meeting them, not expecting them to have perfect English. And I always tell them, and they say, oh, you know, my English isn't good. I say, well, neither is my Spanish, so we're fine.
Yeah. What types of assessments do you find best show a dual language learner's progress?
Anecdotal's best show it, which we do. We have to do a particular assessment with the kids, the desired results developmental profile, and it isn't until the preschool, when they're after three, that do they include the dual language learners. I'm pretty sure. I could be wrong. I honestly, I have to look at it, because it might be, because I work with kids under three, and often they don't have language, so the fact that they don't have English is just part of where they are developmentally. But anecdotes showing, just being in the moment and saying, oh, you know what, look, did you hear that full sentence in whatever language it is, whereas before they were just grunting or saying a word or two. But the assessment that we do shows it much more clearly, because there we have to document it.
When it comes to identifying young multilingual children who have a disability, what are some of the obstacles? So like in terms of speech?
That's where I would engage the family and a staff who spoke their language. It is a challenge, I would assume, because, and honestly, I haven't had one. I haven't had anyone in that situation, but I haven't had anyone officially in that capacity. But often I'll say, you know what, listen, I'll have one of my other staff sit and listen and say, you know what, are they speaking another language or are they just mumbling? Because sometimes I can't tell if that's, you know, if they repeat a word over and over, like, is that a nonsense word or is that really a word in that child's language? I'll try to write it like phonetically and maybe ask the parent. We do have translators available. We do have other staff, I know, who speak Chinese, different dialects of Chinese. So I've never had anyone here that wasn't Spanish or Chinese. So we're fortunate to have people who can help translate. The parent help with the assessment sometimes, in their language. But I do rely on staff, or sometimes it's been another parent. They'll say, what did she just say? You know, especially I remember having two Chinese families, and one of them I couldn't understand. Obviously, I don't know. I actually know one word. But
What type of professional training have you had regarding teaching dual language learners?
Um, Recent, the last few years, I have, there hasn't been any. But we, I've been to workshops, I've been to trainings on just general, because I this doesn't sound very nice, but when we go to workshops, you know, like conferences or something, I have a specific interest that I'm interested in a particular area. Those aren't the ones that I choose the most, but I have been to workshops that just where I've gotten some of the ideas about how to work with families, mm-hmm. how to work with kids. So just kind of some general, nothing like in depth about dual language learners.
Mm-hmm. Last question. What type of preparation do you believe will further support your understanding of multilingual children and their families?
What kind of training? You know, what one thing that interests me is that, which I think would help, is the impact of not having someone speak your language versus, like, how it impacts a child's, like, social emotional development if they have someone who speaks their language versus if they don't. So that, I think, could be interesting. That would help. And just kind of like a, you know, a general, like a day-to-day, how, what can I do day-to-day to help this child? Because I know a lot of people do, like, oh, cup, also, which I may not, I'm not even saying that right, but they repeat it, and I know that that is not the best way to learn a second language. It needs to be sort of in context and not so, like, obvious. Just in conversation, if another word comes up, and it's more meaningful that way than if I just say, like, repeat the English word over and over and point to it. So learning techniques like that would help me understand how children learn a language would probably be helpful.
Thank you so much.
And what time is it?
Right now it's 7 o'clock. You got 60 minutes to get here, okay?
Okay, 60 minutes.
Did you bring your chong? Time to work, time to work. Hello, Santiago. How are you?
T-Rex 100 picked it ready.
Now you need to do 30 T-Rex piñatas.
30? Like three and jewels?
Yes.
30 piñatas for everybody?
Yeah.
Only the birthday guy? Mommy, I am in my
Oh, hi, baby Chango. Where's your mommy? ¿Dónde está? I'm your mommy?
Yeah. Oh, that's my bubble. Hey, dude, that's my bubble. Okay, come on. Oh, baby cat. Yeah.
I think he wants you to be the baby Chango now. Okay, your baby Chango can stay and work.
I get 30 piñatas.
Thank you. Did you also take it to the mailman?
Yep, I did. I found a big mailbox for all 30 piñatas.
Ow! Your baby Chango just hit me.